Hi, folks. Sam Cedar here. This is a bonus episode of the Majority Report. Some of you may or may not know that about a month ago, I appeared on Mark Maron's WTF podcast. We actually recorded it back in February when I was out there to do his IFC show called Maron, which I think is running in a couple of weeks from now. I'm not sure. But anyways, when that WTF episode came out, Film Guy Matthew and I sat down and talked about that episode. You may or may not know that Film Guy Matthew also knows Mark fairly well, and so we figured why not get together, talk about it. This was something that was originally on the members podcast, but we figured we'd release it out into the world. So, world, here it is. Okay, so this is a. You want to do the intro to his to Maron's podcast? I'm here with Matthew Film Guy, and my name is Sam Cedar, and this is a. Okay, all right, enough. Jesus. I don't want the entire thing. Okay. We're going to allude to it, obviously. This is my rebuttal, because Maron obviously has a much greater platform, and I'm responding to his really extended introduction to my appearance.
Unprecedented levels of deference to you.
Well, wait a second. Before we even get to characterizing it in some type of subjective way, his podcast, WTF, it was the 600th episode, and then he sort of bumped me, really, to a certain extent, with Jack Black.
And I feel like that was a quick turnaround. Like, did he literally record that day?
I have a feeling that he recorded it just the day before.
Well, credit to Brendan for getting that up and ready.
Yes, but I mean, again, it's like, okay, so people listen to Jack Black, and then they don't listen to my interview. I mean, look, it's been a long time coming. Let's just go.
One way to look at
let's,
it.
You know, he starts off the podcast here. Here's part of it. This is.
And is nearby. There was an argument to be made that I just maybe broadcast from that studio, but I don't think it's there anymore. I don't know what's in that building.
Okay, so there he is. He's talking about, he's obviously in some very fancy hotel, which he made a point of making clear, in New York, and talking about going to the Air America studios, and he tells the whole story about how we, the last show he did at Air America was one that we did, and you worked on that.
Yeah.
As a production guy.
Made some videos with Mark and you.
Now, Mark described me as a very difficult person to work with. And I want to ask you, Matthew, who worked on that show.
Yeah.
Did you find me a difficult person to work with?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't have the same interaction with you, you know, that Mark did. It was a clearer hierarchy I was working for you guys. So
right. Okay.
I didn't have to go that way.
Okay. So it's not necessarily where we're getting somewhere here, because it's not sort of objectively speaking, I'm a difficult person to work with.
I have worked with you in the past, and, you know.
Many times.
And, you know, there have been some highs and some lows.
Well, but that's completely normal, isn't it?
You know, yeah. In some relationships, there are less, and some there are more.
Right. And now, I think, I mean, I've certainly been involved in a two-person show before. I did one with Janine. I did one with the...
Now, was she hard to work with?
No. I mean, everybody's you know, different.
Right.
Everybody's... It's hard to work with everybody.
Yeah. You
on
know,
some
it's,
level.
It's hard to just be a person with another person sometimes.
Indeed. Indeed. But Maron made it sound like I was problematic, and that was a very difficult time for him, obviously.
True, and I think he was upfront about that.
Right, and, you know, let's be honest. You know, he's got two divorces.
Yeah, and he did
it. I think maybe that's a little indication of somebody else might be a little difficult to work with, if you know what I'm talking about.
I think I catch your meaning.
Now, but here's the – and then Mark characterizes the show that I was – that he at one point during – he talks about Break Room Lab, where I was basically saying just take the money and don't complain about the show. But that
right.
is absolutely – not the case.
Really?
The case was, And I was brought into the show, as I think as he said.
So you're taking exception with something he said on the podcast.
I am taking exception with something he said on the podcast, because I think he was characterizing this incorrectly.
Hmm.
I was brought in, and I was up in, I was living upstate. I was going to stay up there and do a podcast of a show that's not unlike The Majority Report.
By the way, beautiful house. I saw the Airbnb ad. Beautiful.
Oh, thanks. And so I was going to live, I was going to stay upstate, and but then Air America insisted I come down to do this show because they thought it was going to be a TV show. And their idea was we're going to do 300 pilots. And I said, that's ridiculous. First of all, I was the only person in the building who had ever sold a TV show. And I had sold multiple ones, scripts, actual shows for Trio as a director in different places.
Yeah, you're an industry vet.
And so I was like, that's not how a TV show gets sold. What we should do is do either a radio show or even an internet show that would be based like on a radio show. Let's do 3 hours or 2 hours. And on the bottom of the top of the hour, we can do the video product. Because who at 3 p.m. in the afternoon is going to stop what they're doing to watch a half an hour show?
Unemployed
and at that
people.
Time, they didn't even want to cut it up and put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we didn't know how to promote it. That was an afterthought. I mean, and I was like, look, we have a model for what we should be doing. It's the Young Turks. Ours is just going to be funny.
And they had Laura, what's her name, right? Doing didn't she do a web show? Who was on After Us? I forgot her name. She
Laura Flanders?
Laura Flanders, yeah.
Yeah, but no, she wasn't doing a web show for Air America. No.
Oh, okay.
She was doing like a she was doing a I think some type of cable or satellite show.
Okay, that was not on the web.
And it may have been. I don't
okay.
know. But it was a satellite show, and they thought that was the model. And I'm like, no, that's
yeah.
not the model.
Yeah.
The model is, let's get an internet hit. Let's distribute it like a podcast. If people want to see the videos, we put the videos out on YouTube where they can watch it live, but at the bottom and the top of the hour, so they know that when to turn in to
yeah.
watch, as opposed yep. to just listen in the background.
But can I just clarify one thing that you didn't say?
Yeah.
Did Mark made it seem like he was hired, and then he said, I got to hire Sam to do the politics. Was he the first on board, and he brought
Definitely.
You on?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Months later, I was brought on. It was
yeah.
a complete afterthought. In fact, it was very late in the game. And I was told when I came on, I mean, so I said, this is the approach to me, and this is my response. I was like, no, we got to make an internet show.
Yeah.
This doing a pilot doesn't make any sense because it's going to fail, and it's not going to be made into a television show, regardless of the quality, because who's going to watch a TV show like that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the internet?
And they certainly didn't have the kind of money to make a production that was worthy of like a Daily Show or something like
no,
that.
No, they spent a lot of money on it, though.
I mean, it was shot in the break room.
It was shot in the break room. No, not originally.
Oh,
it was shot in one
right.
of
the
studios in there. But we didn't have any money to do anything with the studio.
That's right.
And so that was when I argued, let's do it in the break room, because then the fact that we look so aspirational,
yes,
we're at least using it
yeah,
as part of
worked.
A joke.
That was great.
And
it's very Letterman-esque.
That's right. And so, but when I finally signed on to the show, that whole element of it, there was a little bit of a switcheroo that happened there.
And that may be the source of some of Mark's consternation.
Well, no. I was the one who got switcherooed on.
Oh, what do you mean?
I thought the idea was we're going to make an internet show instead of a pilot. But then rather quickly it went back to it's going to be an internet show. I mean, a pilot, an ongoing pilot on a daily basis. So I got a little bit annoyed about that, but I was like, whatever. But my response at that point was like, well, if we're going to just do this, then we might as well just, take the money. And then it was clear that they weren't going to use this on the radio because they said that's the old Air America. So you guys are going to do your show, which was the most expensive probably single show they had.
Yeah.
Of anything.
Yeah, because we had all this video production.
Yeah, and we're going to keep it sequestered here in, like literally sequestered from the rest of the network because the whole thing, as I came to realize, was that the CEO did not want our show to exist, but it was sold directly to the owner.
And the CEO, this guy, Bennett Zier, had sold the owner on this idea that you got to spend money to make money. So when the owner comes back and says, I've got this other idea where we can spend a ton of money on this video show and it'll become a TV show, the CEO couldn't say, well, no. Just said yes, because this is the way, like, and this, you know, this is the same dynamic when you had the first con man, literally a con man, who started Air America. This is what con men do, or people who are just like, have something to sell.
Right.
And because, you know, Bennett Zier made a lot of money off of, you know, that 1 year that he was there. They don't want to make waves, because then people start to question what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they just go along with it. And so we had this situation where we were sequestered. We had a budget that was probably two times at least any other radio show on the network. But we weren't allowed to go on radio, even to fill in. Like when Tom Hartman had to take a week off, we weren't even allowed to fill in.
That seems weird.
And I was like, look, they don't really care. Like the CEO doesn't care what we do, as long as we stay out of their way. And we go away in a year, because we were going to go away in a year. It was quite obvious. You just got to go to the owner and say, like, this is a better way for us to do it. Let's make an internet show, a podcast. We'll market it through YouTube. The quality will be there. And then we could, if you want to cut stuff down from there, you can cut it. But it's not – the way that we're conceiving this as a pilot that we're doing 300 times does not make any sense.
Let me ask you this. My favorite thing about that show was the stuff that we got to do, like the field pieces, the Survival Sams, and all, I did Mark on the Lower East Side and the Korean Invasion, all that stuff. At what point did those field pieces come into it? Because those wouldn't have worked on radio.
No. What I was suggesting was we play the video. We're not going to be on radio. We just do an internet show. We stream it live.
Yeah.
You know, like we were doing. But it's mostly talk-based stuff.
Right.
And then at the bottom and the top of the hour is when you play the videos.
I see.
So that people could say, like, okay, every 30 minutes, if I want to watch the video, I tune in and watch the video there. And then you just release the video also as YouTube or whatever. But we were actually releasing this stuff on Vimeo, which had no means in which to make money at the time.
I thought some were on YouTube.
Ultimately, we ended up putting them on YouTube, but it was a complete afterthought. And it was not part of the strategy.
Was it monetized?
No. And meanwhile, I would come in and be like, the Young Turks, they have 70,000 subscribers at this time. This was, you know, 2008. I'm like, they're making a lot of money, and we're actually doing, like, original work.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're replaying videos, but we're doing original work. We should be doing – and we could do what they do in that other 50 minutes in any given hour. We could do this 2 or 3 hours a day. But and so I was told no. Okay, fine. Yeah. And then, you know,
Did you feel you were not in a position to make suggestions, being the last Don, and, you know, like, were you not?
No, I made the suggestions, but I was not in a position to dictate the outcome because I was last Don.
So you were considered thoughtfully, you thought, or just dismissed?
Well, I mean, I think there was only like three people involved in this. It was, you know, Brendan, Mark, and Carl, who's executive producer. And I think...
But they were making the decisions as to the format and all that
stuff? Oh, yeah. And
Brendan and Carl were not into that?
Well, I think Carl felt like he had sold this idea of it going to TV, and I don't know.
He was always chasing
TV. I don't know why it didn't make logical. I don't know what Brendan felt.
Yeah.
And I do know that Mark would get irritated for different reasons. He would get irritated with my doing politics.
Yes.
But he concedes. That's why I was brought on to do it.
Yeah.
But it would make him feel like he didn't know what the politics were.
Yeah. But you also guys had like a sort of, you know, two cocks of the walk kind of thing going on. Like you guys never really caught like a, you know, pitch and catch kind of thing. You never worked
I will
out
tell
how
you,
you would give and take.
Listen, the reason why I signed on to it, and I remember saying this explicitly to my wife, Nikki, who you know, is that I have an audience that may be deep in terms of their attachment to the type of work I do, but he's the one who has a wide audience.
That's right.
Because he does socio-cultural stuff and sociological stuff, whereas like, I just do politics.
Right.
And he's much better read than I am. He knows about music and this and that. And I was very conscious of that. And I thought, this is why it worked. This is why it will work.
Yeah.
And I didn't get upset because he was talking about, you know, some fiction book that he was reading, but he would get upset when I was talking about politics.
I think he was also just over the whole politics thing at that point.
Definitely.
I think he was so annoyed by it and so sort of, you know, adding into the spiral of everything personally going on with him that he felt like he had been derailed.
And
by
he took it out on me.
Yeah.
And then, and so that's the actual story of what went on during that time.
Yeah. And I think he kind of alluded to that in the WTF episode.
Vaguely, a little bit. And that's the other thing that bothers me about the whole thing. So then he comes out and he casts me on his TV show. And then also puts me in his podcast, knowing that part of the sort of ongoing shtick of the Majority Report is to complain about the fact that he's not put me on his TV show.
He's taken that away from you.
And that after all that time, 600 episodes, I mean, look, you know, look, I mean, here's the thing. Is there another person in the country who has been on a sitcom, multiple sitcoms? It's on Sex and the City. I was a lead in the show. I was on All American Girl, shows that actually made it, and also sub-hosted in cable news for some of the top-rated.
Your
cable
point is
news.
You're a natural get for the show, regardless.
Of course.
Yeah, sure.
Of course. I mean, it's like maybe I'm not number one on the list of people you get. I may not even be.
But
in the
are
top
you number 600?
But I think I'm probably closer to like 250.
Sure.
275.
I've been on the show more than you have.
Well, there you have it. And
that was early, though.
So,
he didn't know what he was doing yet.
So I build around the fact that he is refusing to book me on the show.
Yeah.
I build something around that, and then he comes in and takes that away from me.
Do you think that was his scheme, the long game, is to just try to undercut your fuel?
Of course.
That's why he was so nice to you?
Of course.
Now, maybe
right?
That's
I mean, because
but
he was very gracious on the intro and brings in Jack Black, and then Jack Black was gracious also.
Yeah. Clearly, he said nice things about you.
And then I am completely boxed in. Am I going to say, no, I'm not going to do it? Because then I lose all the moral righteousness. I can't say I refuse to do the show and then complain about it.
Yeah.
I've got to go do the show.
Maybe you need a new emotional strategy. Maybe you need a new way of relating to the world suddenly. Maybe Mark's done you a favor.
No? I don't think so.
Okay.
It was far more entertaining to have him on and have him like perennially promise to book me on his TV show and then not do it or
I also
onto
think
the podcast. I mean, I'm talking about entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's part of my responsibility.
That's true. But Mark's show is not only, I think, about entertainment. I think the reason why he struck a chord with such a wide audience is that he goes to those sort of emotionally needy and kind of yearning places that people who are listening to the podcast feel. And I think he does, for all of his prickliness, have a true affection for you. And you guys have known each other a long, long time. You were his intern and all that stuff. So despite all
not
the sort
literally
of,
his intern.
I know. That's just what you were saying about
right.
it. But that kind of relationship, I think, is genuine, too. So you saw that Mark, who's now more comfortable with expressing genuine emotion, and you're just not comfortable expressing genuine emotion. Well, you know that.
No. It's not I mean, it was interesting that he said the most effusive things when he was alone in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, come on.
He's still got a little
where
bit of a guard up with you.
He was branding. I mean, look, here's the bottom line.
Well, yeah, that is his brand. He's an emotional guy. He's wearing his heart on his sleeve, and he's not the angry guy he was at Break Room Live.
It's true. He's not. And the success he's had has been really astronomical.
Yeah.
And it really has followed the model that I basically suggested.
And I think he gave you credit for that, too.
Well, I know. That, I also
doesn't that burn
that
you
that
up?
Too. Yeah, that burns me up. I mean, it's like there was really – he gave me no toehold.
I know.
I mean, I was sitting here planning to
it's
do like
Sun Tzu Art of War.
A rebuttal, and
yeah.
He gave me no toehold.
But you know what I thought?
To rebut
Sam,
anything.
I learned things about you, knowing you for as long as I do, on that show because he did what he does so well.
What
he
was it? What did you learn?
You know, that story about your freezing and that whole era in your life of not knowing why you were out in San Francisco and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that was fabricated.
What?
No, that.
See? But that's what I'm saying. That's what Mark does. It's so well on
well,
the show.
I was actually get people to. It was give. I was out in San Francisco, and I had taken the train back. I had come back, and then I came back. So it was literally during a time that we were hanging out. I don't know if he knew about that time, or he probably forgot about it.
But I'm just saying, he got you, Sam, Cedar, Granite, you know, Stone, No Emotion, Rock Island, to actually give something that I thought appropriated a sort of revealing anecdote of that's not just about, you know, Guy Island or Sam could have been somebody, that it was revealing of who you are as a person and the struggles you've gone through. So I gave him credit for that, and it was great for me to hear.
Now, we should make it clear, when you say Sam could have been somebody, that was a bit that we did on Break Room Live.
Right.
And I will say, when I went out to do Maron's TV show, it was during Myla's February break. She was mad because I was supposed to hang out with her, and it just fell on that week, and I was like, there's nothing I can do about it, sweetie.
She didn't like Mark before.
She said to me at one point, she goes, you know, I can't believe you're going out to L.A. You know, you could have been somebody, and now you're going out to L.A. to do Mark Maron's show? And I'm like, where did you hear that? Did you see that? Because I think she must have, like, seen it on YouTube. I don't know how a kid like comes up with that. Like, you could have been somebody. I'm like, where'd you hear those words? She goes, what? You could have been somebody. And I'm like, wait, where did you hear those exact words, though?
Did she cop to it?
No. She wouldn't admit it because I don't know that I would have allowed her to. Like, she was noodling. She was, like, obviously, like, noodling around.
Does she have access, open access to the YouTube like that where she can?
Well, she has an iPod.
Yeah.
And so, yes.
And if she looks at Sam Cedar, those things suggest it.
I would imagine. I have no idea how you know, it works on
well,
the
maybe
iPod.
You're just maybe you're just feeling a little raw that, you know, you got, like, emotionally exposed in a good way, and it's like an endearing way.
No.
But by Mark's sort of just his genuine nature allowed you to open up in a way that you just don't do as part of your normal sort of modus operandi.
No, that's not it. Okay. Just it's just that, like, I, you know, what am I going to do? Start saying to Joe Rogan, like, how come you won't have me on the show?
You mean switch to somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, I have to move to, like,
there's
somebody else.
There's plenty of other podcasts you haven't been on.
Like, I know why Adam Carolla wouldn't have me on the show, because I think he's sort of a moron, and
yeah.
I would probably get on and say something to that effect.
I think, you know, there's who's the alcoholic who lives in Bisbee, Arizona? He has a podcast.
Who's that?
Doug Stanhope. I know you have
Stanhope and I probably went to high school together.
Yeah, I saw that.
At the same time.
I saw that. Someone wrote that, yeah.
I knew. I mean, I didn't know it. He lives in Arizona, is that right?
Yeah, Bisbee. He's famously lives in, like, a small nowhere town because he doesn't want to live in L.A. or New York. And he's doing a podcast there, so you can start a thing with him.
Huh.
I didn't think you were a fan of his.
I don't know that I've ever heard his stuff.
Really?
But I'm vaguely aware of him as a comedian.
I just remember, can I tell this story? When we were first working together on Bad Situationist, I had this DVD of his that he was selling directly through his website. And I said, you know about Doug Stanhope? And you just said, fuck Doug Stanhope.
Oh, I had no idea.
Okay. You're just raging at other comedians randomly.
I think I may have just – that may have just been my response. I mean, you could have said anybody.
Right,
and I could have just like, fuck guy whose name I've never heard of. It's just
– Okay.
I mean, back then I was a little bit more – I tried to be a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah.
About
so
things.
You've matured as well. We all have.
Yeah, but no, it's not mature maturation.
I think it is. I think when you're younger, you need to be more sort of cold and sort of firebrandish about who you're not to establish your identity. Then you get older and you're more comfortable with who you are. You don't need to, like, say,
no, that's not it for me. It's now I'm just too tired.
Tired, yeah.
I think Maron alluded to that, too. You can't tell if you're just, like, if you're, you're growing up or you're just getting too tired to do that.
Yeah, there's something in that.
No, I don't even know. I didn't even know. I had no idea that Doug Stanhope was a comedian. You're talking about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Did you say he's from Worcester?
No. I didn't know anything about him being from Worcester.
No.
I just knew he was, like, you know, he was like a next Bill Hicks guy for about 20 years.
Oh, was he? And did he turn out to be that or no?
You know, in some ways, yeah. But he just hasn't died of the pancreatic cancer part, you know. But he's very clear about his alcoholism.
Timing that.
Yeah. When to do it, when not to do it. I'm sure his agent suggested it was 10 years ago he should have done it.
Well, so I guess now it's basically I just wait for, you know, the episode of Maron to come up. And then
it's
basically.
Do you know what episode that is, what run? Because I think it starts next week. Or
yeah, I imagine it's probably going to play sometime in early July. It's episode 7. So.
And you do play Sam Cedar, the podcaster.
I play Sam Cedar.
The Majority Report.
Yes. And that also, I think, influenced the podcast because Well, I had been working with him for 3 or 4 days
mm-hmm.
as Cantankerous Sam.
And so he's still promoting his show.
We had sort of built that dynamic. And so when I went into his, you know, to his garage, that was still going on a little bit.
Was it, though? Because what we've just talked about is how sort of nice he was to you. He wasn't.
I'm saying I was cantankerous.
Oh, yeah, you were. But I didn't even take you. I thought you would take more shots. I thought you would do more. You know, I really feel like you got
Mark
Maron.
You know what? That was part of the problem, too, is that it was the shoot was fun.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, the some of the bigger shots in there.
I think you're going to have to accept that, you know, there's a part of you that cannot fight and not argue from time to time.
I guess so. All right. Well, this has not been as rebutty as I wanted it to, but it, like I say, he was very slippery.
And he did give you credit for knowing what to do with the web show.
He was very gracious, and, you know, I found that a little bit annoying.
You'll get over it.
Yeah, I guess I will. But it was nice. All right, folks. That ends this episode of this.
And if my eBay auction is still going by the time you hear this.
No.
Okay.
Oh, but if you do want to get a DVD of Who's the Caboose or Pilot Season or Bad Situations, go to pilotseasondvds.com.
I only have one, so yeah, get more with Sam Teeter.
Okay.